Hey, Fed Heads, welcome to another episode of Sharing Our Pairings. This is Sharing Our Pairings, episode 44, When Pigs Fly, because flying pigs. I'm your host, John the Cigar Surgeon. We're broadcast live around the world. We broadcast on the Armed Forces Radio Network. Thanks very much for all our Armed Forces Radio Network listeners out there. We, of course, picked up on podcast on a whole variety of podcast platforms now, including Google Play, Apple iTunes, you name it, we got it. And thanks, of course, to our live listeners out there. I'm joined, as always, by my host, my co-host, Robbie Ress. Rob, what's going on, brother?
Oh, you know, just hanging out. I'm excited, man. We got some good beers. I didn't play by the rules. This was supposed to be a flying pig under crown.
Got to smoke your unicorns, man.
So we talked about this offline, and I probably shouldn't have divulged as much to John, but I did. While searching for my flying pig undercrowns, I did find one, and it was from the original release from they released in, was it Holland? And
isn't that Viet?
And I know that's what you're smoking too, so now I feel bad for not lighting it up. But I know I've got others, I just couldn't find them. But I did find these Bellicosos that actually was from a contest that I won a long time ago. I won a box of these, and so this cigar has got, it's been in my possession for 3 years.
Wow.
So it's quite smooth.
Yeah, I had to do quite a bit of trading, actually. I think I started out with four or five of these. I don't think I've even smoked a single one of these. I gave one away in a Christmas holiday giveaway, Secret Santa exchange a couple of years ago. So I think this is actually the first one I've ever smoked, which, you know, is kind of sad. You trade for a unicorn cigar and then you never smoke. And of course, last year they announced the Undercrown Pig was going to be regular production. So kind of took the shine off of these bad boys a little bit.
Yeah. But the way that I knew that the one that I've got, or the few, I've got two from the Holland release and then three from more recent releases. The more recent ones came in cello and the Holland ones didn't. That was the only thing that, or at least the ones that I got from Holland didn't have cello on them. I assumed that they all didn't, but the newer ones do.
The one that I'm smoking, of course, is a 4 1/8 inch by 60 ring gauge. Uses a lot of fancy tobaccos. I've got it listed as an Atapin Nego Ultimo Corte, whatever. T52 Connecticut River Valley Stock Cut Habano, which, you know, gives that really nice savory sweetness. And then that magic filler, the Brazilian Matafina and Cuban seed, with some Nicaraguan filler in there as well. I think that Matafina, you know, the more Nicaraguan blend cigars I smoke that are sort of Nicaraguan filler with Matafina, Brazilian Matafina, really, really love that filler. Very tasty.
I'm right there with you, my friend. I believe that the Robbie Raz blend from the recent Cigar Safari trip has some Matafina in it. I just pulled up the specs on this Bellicoso, and they're very different from what you just said, according to this website. This one has a San Andreas Maduro wrapper, Brazil Matafina binder, I believe, and Dominican Republic and Honduras fillers. It's not nearly as specific, but it's a 6x52 torpedo. I do think the blends are a little bit different in the standard lines than the Flying Pig and the Corona Viva. I know the Corona Viva is different, but I think the Flying Pig blend is a little bit different too.
Yeah, I mean, I think we talked about this on shows in the past that, of course, as soon as you change the vitola of a cigar, you have to play with the blend. And, you know, I don't want to say we're old hats at it because we've been on multiple cigar safaris, but one of the fun things on a cigar safari is when you sit down and do your blend and you recognize that looking at your blend, it's only going to work in certain vitolas, because if you change the size of your cigar, if you change the length of the cigar, especially if you change the ring gauge of your cigar, it affects the type and number of leaves you can use. So the smaller ring gauge you get, the tougher it is to blend, and so on and so forth. And of course, I think the temptation is with a larger ring gauge cigars, just throw a whole mess of tobacco in there, and that's usually not a good idea.
That's, well, you know, there's some cigars out there that I would beg to differ with you that just have a bunch of different tobaccos in there and they work. And the one that pops into my head is the Propaganda from Viva Republica. That's just got, I feel like that's got like 1,000 different tobaccos in it. And it's a phenomenal cigar. I actually happen to have my Jurisdate blending menu here from my most recent trip. And just to give you guys an idea, if you've never been, when you're blending, you kind of go into this big room and there's leaves everywhere. And in this most recent trip that I did, Henry and Pedro walked around the room with some of the leaves and they would burn it, kind of wave it in front of your face. So you can get an idea of the aroma of each particular leaf. And then you can roll up little cigars just to get an idea of flavor. But if you're, depending on the ring gauge that you're looking at, according to this, 40 ring gauge and lower is you get 2 leaves of filler. 41 to 44 ring gauge is 3 leaves. 45 to 51 is 4. And 52 to 60 is 5. So I wanted to do a Lancero. I didn't go too traditional with my Lancero because I wanted that extra filler leaf. So I went with, where did I go? 7x42. So kind of like a fat Lancero, if you will.
Nice.
So I got that extra leaf of filler in there because you need to get, there's so much that you need from your filler. You need to get some flavor. You need to get some combustion. So getting that extra leaf is huge.
I mean, you can see why when someone's in the creation of a cigar, will they go through 100 blends or 120 blends, because the number of combinations of tweaking different tobaccos,
it's almost limitless.
It's yeah, it really is. And then, I mean, and that's not even taking into account combustion issues and, you know, it's just, yeah, it's complicated.
It's complicated. I don't even want to get into it.
It's complicated, but it's fun.
Oh, I mean, awesome.
I make it sound like work, and I'm sure it's work for the guys, but it's also a heck of a lot of fun too.
I'm coming back. I'm just turning my light on.
That's right. Just trying to fix my nice lag issues, which I think I've got resolved now. Real professional here on Sharing Our Pairings. One of the things I want to say about this cigar is, and I've smoked tons and tons of undergrounds. I love undergrounds. You know, I don't even know how many boxes I've gone through. I'm sure it's got to be 5 or 6 boxes. And for those who aren't aware of the source of the underground, it started with, and one of the things rollers do, and it, you know, if you have a good series of rollers, they're smoking throughout the day as they're rolling, as they're making cigars, and it's just part of the process. And what they're found is that, of course, too many of the Liga, the Unicos, are being smoked. And if you've ever been to Nicaragua, or if you've ever tried to get your hands on some of the Liga Privadas, some of the higher end Unicos are really tough to get. And even the regular production T52s and number nines, they're tough to get. I mean, they are limited by the number of tobacco that they can get their hands on. So what ended up happening is, of course, you got a couple hundred rollers, and even if a small fraction of rollers are smoking cigars, they're going through a lot of cigars in the day. So JD, Jonathan Drew, said, you know, can't have you guys smoking the Ligas. And what they actually ended up coming up with, and I don't think this is the same blend, but they came up with a precursor blend, which is the Undercrown. And it ended up becoming a regular production stick based on the rollers that were in the Drew Estate factory. So, which is kind of a cool origin for a cigar.
That's at least a believable story. Some of the origin stories that you hear about cigars are a little bit ridiculous. But this one actually makes sense, because the first time that I went down to Cigar Safari, and it's changed, the layout at the Drew Estate factory has changed since my first trip, but you've got the big main room and they're rolling all the infused stuff. And there's hundreds of people in there, and they're rolling, and they're just busy going away. And all the Liga stuff was just being done in this one little room. And so you go in the little room, and half of it was number nines, and half of it was T52s. So this wasn't before the Undercrown. They were rolling Undercrowns on the regular floor as well. So you go in there, and the T52 side of the room was empty. they weren't rolling them because they didn't have the tobacco. They were waiting for all the stock cut stuff to be ready and that kind of thing. So, and we talk about that the Liga Privada stuff, and it's relatively easy to find, and usually it is. But the number nine is usually always around, but that T52 is sometimes you can't get your hands on.
Yeah,
and that's a phenomenal cigar.
Still, I think of the regular production stuff, I'm still a T52 man. I do enjoy the original. I have a bundle of the original number nines from 2008, which I got off my hands on from the SigFed store. And they do use, I think they use different tobacco. They do smoke very differently than the current production number nines. Hmm. I do find the flavor profile to be different. But maybe we should talk about our pairings today, because we are doing a pairing show here.
Well, we got a little sidetracked. When we start talking about the blending seminar, I get geeked out, man. This book that they put together has got it's only a few pages, but there is a ton of information. But just to give you an idea, right, these are the tobaccos that you have to choose from. So the number of wrappers is right here, and it's going to change every time, right? So you can see that the wrapper that I picked was the Araparaca, like that's how you say it, Oscuro. I always say that wrong. Binders that you get to choose from. I went with the Cameroon binder.
Because it pairs with everything.
Indeed it does. And these are all your fillers. That's a whole page full of fillers.
That's a lot of combinations.
Yeah, and I mean, you want to get your Seco in there, you know, so you can get some combustion, get your Viso for some flavor, and your Lajero for some kick. And
Lajero!
I did one leaf of each, and I ended up getting messages on Skype, and I ended up really enjoying my blend, and it's a lot of fun, man. I'm telling you, if you haven't gone, you got to get on the next SigFed trip if there's still space. I don't know if there is or not, but anyway, we can get into these pairings.
Yeah,
if you want.
We'll learn more about the Savara as we go, I'm sure. I'm going with a pretty sedate pairing for my first matchup here, which is just a straight up iced coffee. Like I think I had this on one of the previous shows when we were just kind of experimenting with different things. This is just a straight run of the mill Starbucks iced coffee. It's pretty much the only way I can drink Starbucks. Not a big fan of Starbucks. Not going to be a show sponsor anytime soon, sadly. I went with the reduced, the lightly sweetened, because I do find that, and this is kind of true of all iced coffee, they just throw so much sugar in it. You lose all the flavor of the coffee, and it's not a huge consideration for me, but it's a minor consideration, the number of calories. So this is only 45 calories, and I'm not going to drink this whole thing. That's too much for me. But that's a reasonable amount, and it's still... it's still extremely sweet. Like it's. I mean, there's a lot of sweetness to it. I probably cut the sweetness down in half again, but you know, and getting back to Cigar Safari, because that's going to be the topic du jour. One of the great things being in Nicaragua, and this is more of a hot coffee thing, but getting up first thing in the morning, getting a nice dark freshly roasted Nicaraguan coffee. And lighting up an Underground first thing in the morning. It's not something I would do at home, but it is sure something I like doing at the Drew Estate facility. And it's a no-brainer combination. And the iced coffee works too, but I'll tell you what, that hot coffee and an Underground, that's a great way to start my day.
I'm telling you, it's funny, whenever people talk about my camera start, whenever people talk about going on safari, it's like, oh, I'd never do this at home, but... we're all full of it. We would all love to do that at home. For me, my go-to morning smoke was this last trip was either a T52, because right in the morning, forget about it. There's just so much flavor. Or one of the Tabaks. I can't remember which Tabak it was. Mm.
Tabak Red Eyes are awesome.
Yeah, the Red Eye actually is my favorite Tabak. I haven't smoked them all, but I think the one that I have is just a standard one. I can't remember which one it was. they're really good in the morning with, like you said, with a cup of coffee. Don't sweeten your coffee because the cigar's got that sweet, that sweetness to it. So that was your first pairing. I haven't really decided what I'm going to do first here.
Well, maybe while you do that, we can talk about the fact that the audience is tuned into Sharing Our Pairings episode 44, When Pigs Fly. We are broadcast live around the world. We're available everywhere the internet is. In some places, it is not, because you can also pick us up on our podcast offline. Thanks very much for all our Armed Forces Radio Network listeners out there. We're talking Undercrown. I'm smoking the pig, and Robbie is smoking the Bellicoso. Is that right, Bellicoso?
Yep, I'm smoking the Bellicoso, like I said. And this one's got about 3 years on it, and it is smooth as all get out. Like, this is, and look at the burn. It's nice. I take really good care of my cigars. At least I feel like I do now, looking at the way this is smoking.
It's,
I
know, burning
I've had
well. This,
I've had it forever. So I take as good a care as I possibly can, but I'm sure other people do more than I do.
Look at this. That's a nice ash.
Yeah. Oh, see, that's burning nice, too.
If you keep your humidity consistent, you keep your cigars in good condition. I mean, I know people like to talk about burn and stuff like that. It really is consistent humidity that makes your cigars burn well.
Do you rotate your cigars?
Not as often as I should. I mean, I do get to it every probably 7 or 8 months, but it's something I should probably get into the habit of doing every 6 months or less. And I just haven't. I just end up filling my time with too many other things.
Yeah, I have some that I do. You know, I have a cooler that I just don't pay any attention to. And it holds the humidity well, and the cigars, whenever I pull them out, they're fine. But I don't get in it very much. It's inside of a cooler inside of a trunk. And so every now and again, I'll open it just to get the airflow through there and everything, but I should put a fan in there or something, because I kind of ignore that. But like I said, every time I pull a cigar out of there, it smokes fine. Anyway, but we can stop talking about my shortcomings and talk about my first pairing. I'm going to start with the Scotch, which seems like an odd place to start, but I have a feeling the flavor profile of my next two pairings is going to be a little bit heavier than this. So I went today with the Akintosh and Three Wood, and we've talked about this on the show before. And John, God bless him, introduced me to this. And this is the only Akintoshin offering that I've had, but it is phenomenal. It's aged in three different kinds of casks: American bourbon, then Spanish sherry, and then finally in Pedro
Jimenez.
Yeah. Wow, is it really Jimenez? It starts with an X.
It is, yeah. It's another type of sherry cask, and it gives that date and chocolate and sort of darker stewed fruit aspect.
Stewed fruit, that's a good way to put
it. Stewed fruit.
So, the flavor that you're going to get on this, like you said, there's hazelnuts, you get some cinnamon, butterscotch. This is what I'm reading off the website here anyway. Some chocolate in there. And that stewed fruity note is really what you kind of get up front. The nose is really sweet. Really, really sweet. And this is not peated really at all, so you're not going to get any of that kind of fiery peat flavor. And I chose this on purpose because I feel like the sweetness and the complexity of this is going to play well with this Undercrown. Now, if I was going with a fresh Undercrown, a newer Undercrown, I'd go with something a little bit spicier, I think. But I wanted to go with something a little bit sweet because I feel like this cigar is going to has mellowed out in the time that it's been sitting in the humidor. And luckily, it has mellowed out. So hopefully, this pairing is going to work well.
Just going back to what you're talking previously, you said this is the only Akintoshin you've tried. Have you not had the Valinche, the Akintoshin Valinche?
I don't think so. You may have sent me some.
I don't know if I did or not.
I had never heard of Akintoshin or seen it, as far as I knew, before we had it on the show. But now I see it around here a little bit more, or at least the Three Wood. They have it at my local BevMo, so I don't know if they have any other offerings from them or not. I went in specifically looking for the Three Wood.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, I can't remember. I think the Valinche has a... has a wine cask finish to it. It's different. It's not as sherry forward. So it's a little bit sweeter and a little bit brighter. I'm surprised. I may not have sent you, but it is a limited edition bottling. So cool. Sometimes a little bit tougher to find because the 3-wood you can pretty much pick up anywhere.
Yeah, and it's, I mean, this runs, I think it's $79 a bottle, a regular price, usually like their BevMo price. I saw it, last time I saw it on sale, $59, which is a pretty good price for something like this. And this is a really good bottle. I really like it. My brother-in-law doesn't. He actually really likes stuff that's a lot more peated and spicy. So this is on the sweeter side. And I mean, personally, I haven't come across a scotch that I don't like, except for the first time that I had Laphroaig. And since then, I've changed my tune. Yeah, I haven't come across too much that I don't like, but this one is pretty damn good. And the pairing so far seems to be like it's going pretty well, but I need to take a few more nips, if you will.
Yeah, I agree. I think for scotch, as far as scotch is concerned, I don't think there's ever a bad scotch. I think it's just me drinking it at the wrong time. You know, I think of thousands and thousands of different scotches, I'm sure I could find a time to enjoy it. Just, maybe not today is the time.
Yeah, you're probably right.
So we've got a question up from Harley Holmes. Thanks very much for your question, Harley. And he wants to know, after 44 episodes, what elements of a cigar pair best? That's an interesting question. His examples are, what element of smoke pairs well with coffee, whiskey, etc. And I think what we found, from my perspective, is in some ways kind of what we expected. That is, if you've got something, you've got a Maduro or an Oscuro, something dark and peppery and spicy, you want to pair it with something that's a little bit sweet and stands on its own, because you need to match strength with strength, and you don't want to match something peppery with a peppery cigar because they tend to cancel each other out. Now, the converse is true if you've got something like a Cameron, which we seem to be talking about all the time, where you've got that sweetness and the nuttiness, you don't want to be pairing it with a peaty whiskey, because the strong, powerful forward flavors of that are going to run right over the nuances of the cigar. So part of it is matching strength, but part of it is matching flavors that tend to complement. Now, I think what's interesting is we did find with the IPA show that you can find contrasting flavors that also work. So, you know, we found the smoky with a bright citrusy IPA actually works. What are your take on that, Rob?
I can kind of go both ways. I didn't want to say I go both ways, because that could mean something else. Not that there's anything wrong with that. It's for me, it just depends on what my mood is, really. If I like one of my pairings later is a Founders Porter, and it's a heavy beer, and it's got some nice sweetness to it, and I really, really enjoy that beer. It's got like a deep chocolate, some coffee, and it's got a creamy texture to it. And popular opinion would probably be to pair that with something peppery. But sometimes I would want to go with like a big, heavy, sweet Maduro to pair with that. Now, you're right. The flavors would probably cancel each other out a little bit, and maybe that's not the best pairing. But if I'm in the mood for a big, sweet beer, I'm probably not in the mood for a big, spicy cigar, if that makes sense. If I want to get the most out of my pairing, elevate the cigar a little bit, elevate the beverage a little bit, then I probably would go that route. I think one thing that I've learned from doing 44 shows, good Lord, is that I don't really know anything for sure. Some of the pairings that seem like they're going to work don't. And some that seem like they're going to be horrible are fantastic. So it's kind of a crapshoot. I know that's not really a definitive I know the answer, but I don't know. And I've also found that if I go into a pairing and it's just, if I pick up a beer and I pick up a cigar and that's it, I'm not doing what I normally do on the show. If it 9 times out of 10, it's good because I want it to be. Does that make sense?
I think so.
Yeah, I don't know. I think a lot of it has to be with attitude. You know, what you really want out of your pairing, when you're smoking it and drinking or whatever. I think a lot of it has to, like Jose Blanco says, the worst place to smoke a cigar is next to a jerk. You know, that's really, your mindset really has a lot to do with it.
I think Jose is a little more colorful, but since we're being broadcast on the Armed Forces Radio Network, we're gonna keep it clean and classy.
I was paraphrasing.
Clean and classy here, indeed. Sharing our pairings.
So this, speaking of pairings, I had a feeling this pairing was going to work, and it does. It works in the sense that I get, in the way that you were talking about it, I get some sweetness from the three wood, and there's a little bit of spice in there. Not a lot, but there's a little bit. And that spice actually gets kind of elevated by the cigar because there is some spice in here. But now the spice is really, really calmed down because, like I said, the cigar's got some serious time on it. So it's really, really smooth. Both of them are very smooth. So I get some earthy notes, a little bit of sweetness from the cigar. I get some sweetness from the three wood, and it just kind of cycles very, very well. This is a pairing that I will do again because I have more of these and I've got more of that. So this is definitely going to happen one more time.
Yeah, I think sort of building on what you said, one of the nice things about a medium or medium plus cigar is that your pairing option is a little bit more versatile. I mean, part of the things we've got going on tonight is we've got three wildly different beverages. My first pairing here, I've got a sweet coffee, and it's bringing out different things in the undercrown. I'm getting a lot more earth. I'm getting a lot more leather. The pepper that I know is there is really being run over by the sweetness of the coffee. And I know that's going to change in just a minute here when I switch over to the stout, because I'm going to get a whole different range of flavors. And, you know, part of the fun, as Rob was mentioning, part of the fun is sitting down with something you like, but also I think what we've enjoyed on the show is trying different stuff that we don't know whether it's going to work or not. And I think it's been just as much fun in the failures as it has been in the successes. It's just part of the pairing journey.
I know some of those failures are pretty bad, though.
Ginger ale and La Gloria.
Never going to let that one go, man.
Never going to let that one go.
It's funny because in the box of undercrowns, it's I've had these for a while. And I've gone through other undercrowns. And for whatever reason, these have stayed in there. This is not really my favorite size in this particular blend. I prefer either the Corona Viva, which is a different blend. Yeah.
Forget about it.
Or the Toro, just a regular Toro size for me, I feel like is the best representation of the standard undercrown blend. Yeah. And the Bellicoso is fine. It's not quite as good. But so these have kind of sat, like I said, in the back of my humidor. And that box has become storage for other cigars. There's other things in there. And there happened to be two of those La Gloria Esteli Blacks or whatever it was from that show. And that was the first thing I thought when I saw that cigar was, man, I couldn't do it. Like, I almost want to revisit that pairing just to see if it was really as bad as I thought it was. But I can't bring myself to do it. And I think about it every time I see ginger ale, which is often because I do enjoy ginger ale. So anyway, this pairing for me, this is a definite win. And it's a win for the reasons that you described when you were talking about what pairs best. The cigar offers different flavor notes than the Scotch does, but there's a certain underlying earthiness in both of them that really connect, if that makes sense. So I feel like everything gets kind of elevated. I get new flavors from the Scotch, while the consistent flavors that I want are there, and they get to shine a little bit more. I really do get that fruity note up front, and really do get some chocolate in there, and that kind of like butterscotch kind of note, which gets a little bit muted from the smoke, but it's still there. And that earthiness from the cigar really gets elevated, and the peppery notes that you get on the retrohale get elevated as well. It just pairs really, really well.
Just a reminder to our audience that you were tuned into Sharing Our Pairings, episode 44, When Pigs Fly, talking about the undercrowns, the Bellicoso, and the Flying Pig. Thanks very much for all of our live listeners, our podcast listeners, and all of our Armed Forces Radio Network listeners out there. Shout out to the Canadian cigar enthusiasts. I know you guys are crazy and love the show, and you're out there somewhere. Get your questions in through the Google Plus app. Appreciate it. So moving on to our second pairing, I am kind of doing the reverse of you, although it sounds like we're going to meet in the middle here. I am going with a stout second. It's kind of getting into the, you know, is you can see I'm a little more bundled up. I'm going with the Hub, which is Hopworks Urban Brewery. A lot easier just to say Hub. Kind of a cool bottle. It's a survival stout. It is a malt beverage with coffee added. A little bit about Hopworks. This is my first offering from them. They are based out of Portland, Oregon since 2007. They use locally sourced organic and salmon safe hops. I don't know what salmon safe is, but you know.
I don't know why that made me laugh.
Salmon safe.
It means something to somebody.
It means something. I mean, I assume that means that they're not messing with the water source, but you know, they seem really keen on being. I think the verbiage would be conscious about their business impact to the environment. And sure. The other thing that I think is really cool is they use 100% renewable power for all of their operations. And they say that from cradle to gate, they're carbon neutral. So they, you know, they take environmental issues really seriously. And you know, I give them props because it's kind of cool. A little bit about the survival stout. As with all stouts, you can see she is black like my cold, dark heart. Just kidding. My heart is quite warm and red. It is 15 degrees Plato. It is 35 IBUs, which it is. I'll get into the tasting after Robbie introduces his, but it is definitely a little bit more hop forward. 5.8% ABV, so it's a little lighter on the stout. But you know, we've had stouts that are 10, 11, 12, 13%. So this is definitely a little bit lighter. It is a multigrain coffee stout made with ancient grains. They use a pound of cold-pressed organic Stumptown coffee. If you've ever had Stumptown coffee, very, very tasty stuff. They have a ton of different stuff in here. Our amaranth, quinoa, spelt, kamut, oats, wheat, barley. So just a, you know, just a big old hearty dinner of stout.
It sounds fantastic. When you posted up your photo on the site, there were some folks commenting on it that I've never actually had anything from Hopworks, but they've got a little bit of a following, I believe. So that's a good thing. I'm actually going with a stout as well. Not exactly sure which order to have these beers in, so I flipped a coin, give or take. And I am going to go with Ballast Point Commodore American Stout. This is a relatively new, or at least new to my area anyway, addition to the Ballast Point line. 6.5 ABV. It is a dry, roasty stout, according to the bottle. A little bit of info. We've talked about Ballast Point in the past. They're down in San Diego, started by Jack White in 1996. Most of the Ballast Point stuff that I've talked about has really either been like an IPA or something like that, because their Sculpin IPA and their Grapefruit Sculpin IPA, forget about it. Those are damn good beers. If you get a chance to grab those, definitely want to pick those up. I know you just got your hands on a couple of those.
I did. They're resting comfortably in my closet / beer storage area.
Don't let them rest too long. Mm-hmm. They're meant to be consumed. So looking at this, some of the stats here on the Commodore, or I think I'm saying that right. 6.5%, as I said, it's available year round in bottles on draft. 60 IBUs, so it's a little bit. It seems like that's a little bit higher than some of the stouts we've talked about in the past, isn't it?
All right, I was responding to an audience question there. What was the ABV?
The ABV is 6.5. The IBUs are 60 IBUs.
Oh, that's pretty high. I mean, I was thinking I was high at 35 for a stout. 65 is definitely up there.
This one's pretty high, and you can smell it. I mean, it's got a hoppy, like, not to spoiler alert, this is my next beer doesn't have the same kind of note on it at all. I mean, this has got a bright hoppy nose to it, which you wouldn't really expect given that it looks like this. I mean, this is dark. Dark as your dark heart type situation. Strong flavors of roasted coffee, bittersweet chocolate, balanced with a light, crispy hop aroma, and there's some bitterness on the finish. It's more of an earthy stout for me. It's not a sweet stout. I went with earthy on this for different reasons than I went with the Akintosh. I went with something sweeter with the Akintosh, and I wanted to try something a little bit more earthy. Just to see how it pairs with the cigar, because the cigar is a bit more earthy. So we'll see how those two things, how it plays out. I'm curious.
So I've had a few sips of my survival stout, and it is interesting. Even at 35 IBUs, I'm getting a lot of hops. not to the level of an IPA. So when I talk about a lot of hops, what I mean is it's influencing the stout a lot more than what I would have expected. So I'm kind of getting this, that what you would expect out of a stout with that rich, dark toasted malt, but then it follows up with a little bit of sweetness, and it's not sweetness from the malt, it's sweetness from the hops. So I'm still trying to wrap my head around it. It works, although I don't think it would be my first choice of a stout to go with the Undercrown. I think what really complements the Undercrown well is something that is hearty, that's it's very strong, and perhaps like your stout, where it's a smokier stout, a heartier, more toasted stout. Because ultimately, you know, in my mind, when I'm pairing a stout with the Undercrown, I'm trying to get something smoky and very chocolate and bitter to sort of bring out some of the sweetness out of the Undercrown. That makes sense.
It does, and you caught me mid-sip. it's interesting, man. Like, the flavors that I'm getting out of the cigar now have completely changed. Now, I'm in the middle of the cigar, but I haven't smoked enough of it for there to be some sort of major transition between now and, you know, 5 minutes ago. But the flavor profile is really, really different. And it's due to this stout here. A lot of kind of a dry cocoa flavor on the finish, coffee notes up front, really robust. But you definitely do taste that kind of crisp hoppiness in there as well, which doesn't, you don't really expect, from this. I mean, I'm not expecting a lot of hoppiness from this, but it's there. And I think it's accentuated a little bit by the cigar. The sweetness that I'm getting out of the Undercrown now has elevated a lot. Dry black pepper on the retrohale now, big time. And it wasn't really strong before, but it's there now. And that finish from both, that dry black pepper and kind of a dry, like a dry cocoa powder almost, from the beer, really, really pairs well. This kind of goes back to that question. These two beverages are they're polar opposites. They're completely different, but the cigar is dynamic enough, to use a lame term, to pair with both of them. And I almost think that this pairing is a little bit better once my palate kind of acclimated to the big change in flavor profile. I do want to go back to it, but so far, so good, man.
Well, I think what I'm getting out of the stout pairing here is a little bit more of that wrapper influence, you know. And if you've smoked a lot of T52s, you know, part of the thing I really like in the T52s is that wrapper gives you this sort of combination of just a cedary, dark, complex Maduro taste with a little bit of sweetness and a little bit of pepper, but not too much pepper. And it's not leathery and earthy like the number 9. It's just got more body to it, to me, and I'm getting a lot more out of that, out of the Undercrown now that I've moved on to the stout. So it's a, like you said, it's a completely different pairing, and it's bringing a lot of different flavors out of the cigar that were perhaps just getting run over by the sweetness from the iced coffee. So it's different, but it still works. I don't think this would be my first choice in stout pairing. I think, again, I might go with, maybe a 1050 from Oscar Blues would be a good choice, just because it's more of a classic stout, just a full, heavy, smoky stout, which is kind of where my wheelhouse is for stouts. And I think that would go really nicely with the Undercrown.
Yeah, I think I'm closer. I'm closer to that than the profile that you're working with. Now, I think a 1050 is got it's a bit stronger in flavor than the Commodore here, but man, I'm really, really pleased with it. The finish lingers a lot, and it's that dry cocoa from that I'm getting from the and I think it's the cigar is kind of drying that out a little bit. I think if I'm just drinking this stout on its own, which I have before, it's just more of a chocolate finish. It doesn't really have that dry aspect to it, but there's something that's really appealing about that, and the way that it pairs here. This is this might be one of the best pairings that I've had this year. It's the cigar is so smooth. The beer has just enough body to it, I guess, to to hold up to the cigar without overpowering any of the flavors. It doesn't feel like anything's getting pushed out of the way. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah, you can still get all of the flavors out of both things that you're pairing together without either one being run over by the other, which is, I think, if you're looking for the perfect pairing zone, to coin a really terrible term, that's where you want to be, where one thing is not taking away from the other.
Where everything's complementary. Yeah, there's a lot of that happening here. And I think the interesting thing about it that I enjoy is that kind of bright hoppiness that this has, and that slight bitterness on the finish that almost kind of, you know, you're tasting the beer and then it's like, okay, now you're done. And it's going to linger a little bit, but that bitterness on the finish is like, okay, stop. That's like your cut cue or whatever. And, you know, when they close the little thing, when they're making the movies, you know what I'm talking about? The little board.
I don't know exactly what you're talking about.
But it's like, okay, and done. And so that's when the flavor, yeah, exactly. And that's kind of when that thick, heavy flavor stops, that chocolate still kind of lingers for a bit, but man, this is really good. I'm excited. I'm curious to see how I'm going to do with this porter next, but I'm not ready to move on just yet.
Yeah, I think if I were to revisit this survival stout with a cigar, I think it would probably end up being the number 9. I think that would be a little bit better. In my mind, the number 9, because it is so earthy and leathery. I think the survival stout with the hoppiness in it would offset it a little bit better. That makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I hear you. Okay, yeah, so you've got, it's more of a coffee blend. Now, I'm curious to try this. I'm actually going to look for that Hopworks. The bottle's very distinct looking. It looks like one of those old school, like the old school stovetops, that the electric stovetops where the coils all heated up.
Oh, yeah.
Like the 80s, that's what it reminds me of, their logo. But it's very distinct looking. I don't recognize that. I don't think any of my local shops have it, but I'm definitely going to look it up just to see. But yeah, I think that when you say that 10-50 pairing, that's probably really good. I have one of those in the fridge. I'm a little bit remiss that I didn't crack that one open. That would have been a good choice. But this Commodore from Ballast Point is legit, man. This is working out really well.
Just a reminder to our audience, you are tuned into Sharing Our Pairings, episode 44, When Pigs Fly. Pairing up some undergrounds today, a flying pig and a bellicoso. Thanks for all of our podcast listeners, our live listeners, and of course our Armed Forces Radio Network listeners out there. Hope you guys are staying safe and enjoying the podcast. I think one of the interesting things for me about this underground, and they really talk about it, is of course the smoke production. And this is kind of key across all of the Drew Estate cigars, is that they just have a stupid amount of smoke production. I mean, when you light up a Drew Estate cigar, if you're lighting it up on a patio, and you can see, I'm not puffing on it, and it's filling my screen with smoke. And there's something very satisfying about putting out enormous amounts of smoke. And I don't know what it is. I think there's a mouthfeel component to it, that the more smoke you're getting off the cigar, it coats your mouth a little bit better. And I think it imparts some flavor a little bit better than something that doesn't give you that sort of satisfying thick smoke off of a pull or a draw.
I have a theory. And this is more of a theory of how I smoke. But like you're saying, this is like, it's just smoke just billowing from this thing. Now, I think the way that impacts the way that I smoke is that it makes me smoke slower. If I have a cigar and I'm working on it, I'm puffing away or whatever, and there's no smoke coming off of it, I feel like, oh man, it's going out. I better puff on it again. But this, I know it's burning because I can see it. And I mean, look, the burn is perfectly straight. And I know I don't have to consistently pay attention to it. So it causes me to smoke it slower. And we've talked about that. On you went on a little bit of a rant on our last show about smoking speed. So at least for me, if I've got something that's burning like this, it's giving me a lot of smoke, it slows me down. I don't know if that's maybe that's just me or what, but yeah, it slows me down, and I feel like I get a better performance from the cigar because I'd never let it get too hot.
Yeah, I think it's more satisfying, you know, you're getting, when you pull off a cigar and you get a big mouthful of smoke, that's what you're looking for. If you have to take a couple of draws, 3-4 draws to get the same amount of smoke, then naturally you're smoking faster and you're smoking hotter. But whatever the reason, it works for me and lends itself to leading me into the last pairing, which I said we're kind of doing this backwards. So I'm going with Scotch last. And one of my old standbys, the Glenfiddich 14-year-old rich oak. I love this whiskey. This is a fantastic whiskey. It's a little bit brighter. So I've started out with sweet coffee, went to stout where it's a little bit hoppy, and obviously stouts are a little bit more malty. And now I'm going to the opposite spectrum. I'm going to the fresh fruit and sort of Christmas candy and a lot of orange rind and peel, maybe some strawberries. But this is the opposite spectrum, but I have a feeling this is still going to work, even though, you know, we're all over the flavor map today with our pairings. I think this is still probably going to work really well.
Yeah, we did kind of go all over the map, but that's all right. It's funny. This is, we kind of went in weird different directions, but so far everything's worked out for me. This is the one that I'm worried about the most now, given how everything worked so far, because this is a bit sweeter. My final pairing of the show is the Founders Porter. It's dark, rich, and sexy, according to the bottle. Although she looks a little bit conservative, really.
She looks a little 18th century.
She looks like she's in mourning, actually. She's wearing black, but it also looks like she's painting something, maybe? I don't know. I don't know her personally. From Founders Brewing... and they were, let's see, Founders was established, I think, in the late 90s. Yeah, 1997, by Mike Stevens and Dave Engbers. Anyway, I don't know too much about Founders because they haven't really been available in California until recently. They started shipping to California about a month ago. And the first thing that I was able to find in the stores was a 6-pack of the Founders Porter. So I got very excited to purchase one. Runs about like $10.99 for a 6-pack. Founders is really known for their stouts, their breakfast stout. I'm sure you've seen it, a kid eating breakfast on there. And the KBS, which is the barrel-aged breakfast stout. Both of those come in 4-packs, and they're not available all the time. They're more seasonal releases. This is Founders Porter is part of their core line, and they've got 5 or 6 core beers. Very, very tasty. I've really enjoyed it, and I've gone through, I don't want to say how many 6-packs, but this is not my first one. The nose, let's see, I'm just going to give you some of the tasting notes here, just basically from the website here. It pours silky black with a creamy tan head, and as you can see, that is correct, with some notes of, it's got a sweet nose, strong notes of chocolate and caramel, full flavor, blah, blah, blah. It's smooth. It's creamy. It's kind of velvety in the mouthfeel. But it's a little bit sweeter. It reminds me of flavor profile of the Prairie Bomb, if you've had a chance to sip on the Prairie Bomb before.
Oh, heck yeah.
Not quite as expensive. I can get a 6-pack of these for the same price as one Prairie Bomb, but just about one 12-ounce bottle, mind you. Both very good. And I'm curious to see how this is going to work. I really am.
So I've had a chance to take a couple sips of my whiskey, and I'm not sure this is necessarily the best pairing, but it is interesting because the sort of, as I mentioned, there's a lot of bright fruity notes, and it's bringing a lot more of the core tobacco flavor out of this Underground. And possibly more than I've ever tasted in an Underground. So I think I'm getting a lot more of the filler flavor, which is just sort of this, I can't really describe it other than saying tobacco, but it's just this rich tobacco with a little bit of sweet cedar, maybe some barbecue notes. And none of that was coming through for me on the stout, and certainly not with the coffee pairing. So it's interesting. But I don't think it ultimately works for me. I think if I were to revisit this, I might go with something that's a little bit on the peaty side, perhaps like a Talisker 10 or an Oban 14, or maybe that delicious, magical Japanese whiskey the Chichibu might go really well with this because it's just got a enough of a peat bit there to bring out some nuances out of the cigar without, you know, being a Lafroy quarter cask or a Lagavulin where the peat maybe takes over from the cigar.
Interesting. Yeah, I'd be curious to try a scotch more on the peated side. And I should have grabbed one instead of doing two beers. But whatever. So the pairing isn't quite as good as I anticipated. I don't know, there's a weird note that I'm getting from the beer that it's really running over all of its flavor. And I've had this beer on its own, and it's phenomenal. And sorry about that, my email just popped up. I don't know. Keep talking. I need to try this again.
Sure thing. So I think it's interesting, you know, we've talked about versatility, and Harley had a really poignant question, which was interesting about, you know, what's the best? And I think, you know, we talk about tonight is kind of a good time for that question because we're talking about three very, very different pairings that have produced very different results. I started out with an iced coffee, which was on the sweeter side and certainly, you know, classic coffee pairing, which is great. And then I went to a stout, which had a little bit more hop forward, which brought completely different flavors out of the cigar. And now I'm into a scotch whiskey, which is on the brighter, fruitier side. And again, is bringing out a totally different flavor combination when paired with this Underground Flying Pig. So, you know, it's going to be hard. I'm going to be very hard pressed to say which is my favorite. My gut instinct would be the Survival Stout, because to me, pairing a Maduro cigar and a stout together, That's kind of my wheelhouse. That's, you know, that's a no-brainer pairing. But all of them have been interesting.
Yeah. this Founders pairing isn't working. And it's unfortunate. I'm just getting kind of bitter notes from the beer. And it gives me kind of just like a burnt quality. It's kind of running over the palate a little bit. And in a bad way. It's something about it is not good. It's one of those things where with this show, we go from one thing to the next. So your palate needs to acclimate to what you're doing. You have a few sips of water, maybe a few sips of whatever it is your next pairing is. And you got to give it a minute your palate needs a minute to catch up. And so you know that flavor when you go from one beer to another where it's like, oh, wait, this beer doesn't taste like that. I'm going to take a few more sips and let it work out its issues. It's not working out its issues. It's just kind of sitting in that spot where it just doesn't taste right. I don't think it's not the fault. It's not the fault of the beer. It's not the fault of the cigar. It's just they weren't meant to be consumed together. Yeah, I don't know how else to say it. It's funky, man. There's a weird funk happening right there. I'm just going to let it go away and take a few sips of my water and work my way back to the Commodore.
So I think if I were to pick a favorite pairing of the night, I think the Hub is probably the winner, although, again, I don't know that it would classify it as a clear winner. If I were to revisit the pairing, I think I'd go with just a straight black hot coffee. I think that's just a no-brainer, easy pairing. I think if I were to revisit with a stout, I'd probably go with something a little bit darker, a little bit less hoppy, just to get that classic stout taste. I think you could go with a nice porter, as long as the porter was more of a smoky porter or a chocolatey porter. But I think it just goes to show you the versatility of this particular cigar. You can go with a lot of different beverages and still come out with something salvageable, except for obviously your last pairing.
Yeah, it just didn't work. And it happens, you know. For me to pick the one that I didn't like. That's easy, which is unfortunate because I really do like that beer. I think that I would have to say that the Ballast Point American Stout, the Commodore, is the best pairing. It's just something about it. It's very fall. It's, you know, it's a big heavy beer. It's a big cigar with a lot of flavor to it, some spice to it, with all the sunshine gleaming in through the back and backlighting me and making everything dark. it's hard to tell that it is late fall here, but it is.
It sounds terrible.
It was supposed to rain today, and it's now it's sunny. There's not a cloud in the sky. Well, there's a few, yeah, it's actually a beautiful day. I think the most interesting thing that I'm going to take away from this is that this particular undercrown paired really, really well with that scotch, and it paired really, really well with that stout. And those scotch and stouts are very different, obviously. The flavor profile is different. This is much more earthy, nowhere near as much sweetness from the stout as you're going to get from this this particular scotch I was having, the Freewood. It has a lot of sweet notes to it, some fruity notes to it. And they're very different, yet they still paired really well. I think I would go with the Commodore simply because it elevated the cigar a little bit more. I'm getting those earthy notes that I really want, that black pepper that you want on the retrohale from this. That dry cocoa finish on the beer really does take this to the next level. So for me, that's the winner, hands down.
So we'll be back on Cigar Chat tomorrow night with a little bit later time at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time with Jose Blanco. Jose is always a blast to have on the show. You know, certainly if I were to list of favorite people in the industry, Jose would be on that list and very high on that list because he's very, very intelligent man and love to listen to him talk about tobacco. Next week, we'll be back on Sharing Our Pairings at our regular new time of the having
our
a normal
winter, our winter time.
Our
winter schedule.
And I think next week maybe we should get back into the peated whiskey kind of round because if you know we're getting into fall, it's kind of feeling like peated whiskey. And I know I've got some single cask stuff that I sent you, which could be interesting on the show.
Yeah, we could get into some interesting stuff. I'm you know, as I said, I'm open for anything. We opened up a thread on cigarfederation.com in the forums to suggest some pairings, and a lot of people suggested port, so I think that's going to be high on our list to do as well, which port also is, to me, I think of port as like a winter-type drink as well.
Absolutely.
So that'll be interesting to check that out. And maybe we'll get into some mixed drinks again. We haven't done one of those in a while. And there's some interesting things that my wife and I have been doing with mixed drinks that I feel would pair really well, so I'm curious.
And then, of course, in 2 weeks' time, I'll be off to sunny Havana, so reporting on the Partagas Festival in Havana, so I won't be around for the...
You're not going to do a show from Cuba?
The internet would in no way, shape, or fashion allow for a show. I would love to do a show from Havana, but there's no way the internet would allow for that.
Cuba says no.
So thanks, everyone, for tuning in. Appreciate all our Armed Forces Radio Network listeners. We'll be back again at a regular new winter time next week. Make sure to tune in. And as we always say, make sure to drink better, but drink less. And we're back.
That was a quick break.
Yeah. It's cold. I don't want to sit out here motionless for too long. Yeah,
I know. Your face. You're getting some rosy cheeks there, my mm-hmm. friend. And I don't think it's from the booze.
It is not, sadly. I would love to do a show from Havana. I mean, sitting on the patio at the Nacional, the famous hotel there, the Nacional. Which just a little jab out to Seth. I can't believe that Seth has not had me on what embargo to talk about Cuba. I mean, this is going to be my third trip down to Cuba, and I've not been on a show to talk about Cuba, but I digress. It would be fantastic to do a live show sitting on the couch in Havana. I'd love to make that happen, but if you know Cuba, I mean, getting a single email on their Wi-Fi takes like 5 or 10 minutes. So yeah, there's no way in a million years you'd be doing a podcast show from there.
I think it's worth a shot, man. I think it's worth a shot, but we'll see if, when we'll do, maybe Aaron and I will do a show while you're gone. Aaron from Blind Man's Puff. I think you actually emailed me about that and I neglected to respond. So, we'll look at that. But, you know, it's funny. We kind of went into this show and it was, yeah, well, okay, we'll pair some undercrowns and see what happens. We were supposed to do Flying Pigs, which was that was what was going to make it cool, and I fucked that up. But I think this is one of our more interesting shows.
Yeah.
It was more fun on my end, maybe.
It's versatile. I mean, you know, and maybe this is kind of a sad thing about the underground is that I've smoked so many of them that they get forgotten about, which is really sad because, you know, when I'm down in Nicaragua, I'm smoking undercrowns nonstop, and I'm pairing undercrowns with rum, and I'm pairing it with whiskey, and I'm pairing it with coffee. And yet in 44 shows, we've never done an undercrown pairing. And, you know, just so the listeners out there are aware, by no means is Drew Estate sponsoring this show. So all the love that they're getting is unpaid for love. You know, it's a versatile cigar. It just works. It works with a lot of different things.
It's funny, man. As you started talking, I'm thinking, this is one of those cigars that you take it for granted because, I mean, you can get them anywhere. You can find them on, you know, your discount cigar sites, and you can get a 5-pack for really, really reasonable prices. Excuse me, I don't want to say cheap, but reasonable prices. So it's easy to overlook it because, oh, what's new, what's new, what's new? Sometimes just because it's new doesn't mean it's better. And this is a damn good cigar, and I haven't smoked an Undercrown. I haven't smoked a regular Undercrown, let's say that, because I've smoked the Dogma, which is the same blend as the Corona Viva, but in a different size. I've smoked the Shady, and I've smoked the Corona Vivas, but I can't remember the last time I smoked the Bellicoso, and this is a damn good cigar. It's almost, we're so spoiled that we get so many new cigars. I'm on a soapbox here. That a lot of the good stuff that's been around for a while just gets forgotten about, like you said. And I'm glad that this was John's idea. I'm glad that you brought it up because, and frankly, I'm glad that I couldn't find my extra Flying Pigs because this is a really, really good cigar. That gets
totally off topic, but I just want to mention I moved up to a new humidor for my Cubans, and I got this monster Montague cabinet. And one of the things I picked up
with it is,
do you have that?
Yeah,
that's such a great cabinet. I mean,
just for your Cubans?
Just for my Cubans, yeah.
Jesus, man, that's like, well, that's about half of my full collection is in my Montague.
Mm. That's just my Cubans, and it's not full. Because my other humidor is full, but what I meant to talk about, I wasn't trying to humble brag there. I picked up this really interesting thing from Zycar. They've got this new, and I forget the name, but it's because this is not sponsored by Zycar. It came out of my pocket. They've got this interesting remote sensor kit. So you put the and it can support up to 3 satellites, but you put it in your humidor, and then you get this really nice stand unit that sits on top of your humidor. It's got the temperature and it's got your humidity and it's got the time on it. And I tell you, it's great. Like, you know, it's great because it's got a big display. The numbers read out really well. And I don't have to open my cabinet to know what the humidity's at. I can just take a glance at it and it's good. And I feel comfortable knowing where it's at. And I can just set the cabinet in the corner, let it do its thing. And I don't have to think about it. It's really nice.
Now, is that a separate thing from your humidification device, or is it part of the humidification device?
It's a totally separate thing from the humidification device. All it is a
humidor. It's like a little sensor in there, yeah.
It's just a sensor in there. It's a hygrometer that's connected to a wireless unit with a big display on it, and the wireless unit sits on top of your cabinet. And, yeah, that way you don't have to open it up, which is really – it works really well. It's working really well. I've had it for a couple of days, and, you know, looks good.
I've got something similar. I use a Cigar Oasis in – my Montague, the big ass one that's like the size of a shoebox.
Oh yeah, the Magnum XL.
And it's wireless. So, and I actually haven't done it yet, but you can hook it up and you can check it on your phone. You can check it wherever you want. And you can, I believe, and I may be speaking out of turn, and if I am, I apologize. But I believe you can set it to where if it gets below a certain point, it'll ping you. You'll get
on your phone.
You'll get a little notice on your phone. Hey, your water level's low, or you know what have you. I haven't taken the time to set it up, which I should. But that's a really cool feature. There's a lot of really cool stuff that's out there that helps you take care of your cigars. Because I mean, let's be honest, we invest a lot of money in cigars. I mean, we get samples to do reviews and stuff like that, but we buy cigars too, and it's not cheap. Nope. It's not cheap, man. So those types of tools are, it's, we take that stuff for granted because it's there. Like I've got it and I haven't even set it up yet. But yeah, it's the kind of thing that, it's a nice tool that you don't have, like you said, you don't have to get in there and check your little hygrometer or whatever it is that you're using. It's right there on top. That's actually really cool. I like that. I'm actually going to have to set mine up on my, on my phone.
Yeah, I like it. So, you know, this is kind of the time of our podcast where we typically talk about football, and I did sit down and kind of go over the football picks from the last couple of weeks. Last week was last week was a little bit of a rough week. I both lost my fantasy matchup, which was really demoralizing for me, and didn't do that great in the pick'em of the week. I only went 8 for 12. You picked the big pick, of course, the gimme pick. You took the Patriots over the Jets, and you got that pick. But you, I went 8 for 12. You went 6 for 12. So neither of us did that well. You know, I think if we'd been playing smart, we would have taken the Seahawks over the 49ers. But we both took the 49ers. Jags won a big game, which was surprising. Saints over the Colts. So it kind of seems like the Saints have gotten their crap together. And and maybe the Chiefs know I'm dissing them, so they decided to come out and just finally tear up the Steelers' luck because they managed to beat the Steelers, which was I don't know what that was all about.
It was about who the hell was their quarterback, Tom Landry or whatever the hell?
I don't even know.
No, Lent was a joke. Landry Jones was their quarterback. They're getting Big Ben back this week.
Yep.
Who's sitting on my bench. So if anybody needs a quarterback in our fantasy football league, holla at me, as the kids say, or at least they used to, because I've got two pretty good quarterbacks and I could deal with them. I won my week. I won pretty big. I think only Marty Messina, who played Matt, outscored me last week. In a week where I had to go with EJ Manuel at my quarterback, I felt pretty good about the way things went. Had a nice game from Danny Woodhead.
Yeah, no doubt.
Danny Woodhead's my boy, man. Like I remember when I drafted him, I was kind of stunned that he was still out there because he's just what does he get, 5 or 6 carries? But he's going to catch
a little engine that could, man.
He's going to catch 15 passes or something every game. So, I think in our league, he's the number 3 running back because we're a PPR league. I feel pretty good about the direction that my team is going. I didn't have my quarterback. I also didn't have AJ Green last week, but Martavis Bryant, all he does, like Chris Carter, is catch touchdowns. So that works for me too. I think that guy's only played like 14 games and he has 15 career touchdowns or something like that.
Yeah.
That's nuts.
You should have taken me up on that Bridgewater offer because he ended up putting up 19 points.
Game.
He had a great game. Maybe he's turned a corner. I'm hoping.
It's funny, man. I of all the quarterbacks that I wanted to pick up, because there was a few to pick up last week, EJ Manuel was the one I picked up. He got me 16 points, which was fine. But he had the lowest amount of points. I almost picked up Kirk Cousins. And didn't he have like 28 points or some crazy number like that?
Yeah, he had a big, big game.
Yeah, it's this league has been interesting. And Marty's team, who beat Matt last week, actually, I'm leading the league in points. But I'm still in third place because I lost to Matt, and Matt is in my division. I would like to play Matt again, but I'm not going to unless we play in the playoffs. But, the league is a lot of fun. It's fun when you have a team that scores a lot of points, and I've been lucky that my team is scoring a lot of points. But anyway, let's get into some of these picks, man.
Sure. Just before we do, Bob Dog went 8 for 12. So Bob Dog had about the same kind of week that we did. And we called the Raiders game all day long as the trap game of the week. And sure enough, it was the trap game of the week. Raiders ended up coming on top of the San Diego Chargers.
Any of us pick the Raiders?
No. Because why would you pick the Raiders?
Because it was the trap game of the week.
It was the trap game of the week. And
I'm
none
pretty
of us
sure that I picked the Raiders, dude.
Nope.
Nah, damn it. All right.
And the Dolphins had a big week. Anyways. Moving right along, because we've got some interesting games. I'm still a little salty over my team's loss to the Patriots. I think it was a great game, but you know, they had an opportunity to win that game. They had several opportunities to win that game, and proverbial ball went right through their fingers and they lost, which is, you know, I hate losing the Patriots. But they're looking like the lock to make it to the Super Bowl this year. And of course, the Dolphins had just a friggin' monster game, but let's move on to the week 8 picks.
Speaking of the Dolphins and the Patriots, that's the Thursday night game, right?
And that's going to be an interesting Thursday night game. You know, the Dolphins have kind of had an up and down year. Philbin's gone, and they seem to be playing way better with Philbin being gone. Bills are on bye, Jags are on bye, Eagles and Redskins are all on bye. What a great Thursday night matchup. You've got a classic divisional game. Even if the Dolphins weren't playing good football, anytime the Dolphins play off against the Patriots, it's a tough, tough game. The Dolphins are sitting at 3-3. The Patriots are undefeated. You know, even though I think it's going to be a tough, tough game, it is in Foxborough, and I'm not going to be stupid. It's not my team in play, so that's a lock for the Patriots for me.
This feels an awful lot like a trap game. It feels an awful lot like it.
I just can't see the Dolphins outscoring the Patriots.
No, I can't either, but, man, they just went absolutely batshit crazy last week.
On the Texans.
Yeah, but, I mean, still. I think they're playing with some confidence. I think it's going to be a better game than it would have been, say, 3 weeks ago. But yeah, I'll still go with – I'll take the Patriots because that's – and if the Patriots lose, whatever, I'll take that loss.
Now, I think we've got another London matchup, which I don't know what's up with the London games this year, but whatever.
It's like every week.
It's like every week. You know, and we kind of shit on the Bills, I think it was Bills-Jags game last week. But you know what? It ended up being a really good game. The Jags ended up winning, and it was a hell of a game. I don't know if you caught it, but it was broadcast on Yahoo. It ended up being a really good game. You know, there was a bunch of cool stuff that happened in the game.
DJ Manuel turnovers.
Yeah, lots of turnovers. I mean, turnovers are exciting, especially for a London audience. But it's going to be the Detroit Lions and the Kansas City Chiefs. And the Kansas City is listed as the home team, but I don't call that game.
The Detroit Lions. I think they're just a bad football team. I think they're bad. I mean, yeah, they've run into some tough competition. I mean, they lost to the Cardinals. They lost to the Seahawks. They lost to the Broncos. They've lost to the Vikings twice now. I just think they're a bad football team. I don't think the Chiefs are much better, but I think the Chiefs found a running back in Chapstick Thomas or whatever the hell his name is. Chapstick Davis. I don't think either one of them is very good. I would probably go. I'm going to go with the Chiefs.
I'm also going with the Chiefs. I just in good conscience, I can't pick the Lions. The early game, Buccaneers face off against the Falcons. I think it's going to be a tough game. Bucs and Falcons play tough football. You know, I feel like this is one where the Bucs might come out ahead, but. I'm going to have to go with my gut, and the gut says go with the Falcons.
Yeah, I mean, they're at home, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're what are they? They're 6-1?
Yeah, not doing too bad.
You know, there's no reason. There's really no reason to pick the Bucs here. Unless you want to be creative and be cute. I'll take Atlanta. Because my boy Julio is going to go for 12 catches, 150 yards, and 2 touches. So
yeah, Julio's going to light it up.
That's my boy.
Arizona Cardinals travel to Cincinnati to face off against the Browns. I think this is not going to be an easy matchup for the Cardinals. Their defense has not been playing very great. And the Browns have found ways to win football games. But I'm going to have to go with the Cardinals.
I let it go last week, but this is the second time you've called them the Cincinnati Browns.
Yeah, I don't know why I keep doing that. It's Cleveland Browns.
They're both orange.
I don't know. It's the Cleveland Browns, and it's not alcohol talking because I haven't had anything to drink.
No, I'm looking at, and I feel like Cleveland is a better team than their record shows.
Absolutely. I mean,
they barely lost to the Broncos. They barely lost to the Chargers. They barely lost to the Raiders. I'm just going by score. I didn't watch the games. Although I did catch a lot of that Broncos game because they kept showing highlights. And just to go off topic a little bit, the guy who does the commentary on the Red Zone channel is awesome.
Nice.
That do you get the NFL Red Zone channel up there?
No, because that would cost a fortune.
Oh, well, it's part of my cable package. And basically, if you're not familiar with it, there's a guy, and they just kind of hop to every game, whoever's in the red zone, whoever's close to scoring.
Red zone is the best way to watch football.
Oh, it's unbelievable. It's total ADD football. And that guy who does that, is freaking awesome. I digress. What the hell was the game? Arizona at Cleveland. I think Arizona is a really good football team, and Cleveland is better than everybody thought they were. This kind of feels like a trap game to me a little bit too. I think if Cleveland could get out and score some points early, I don't know. Whatever, it doesn't matter. Let's take Arizona. I'm taking Arizona.
Your 49ers face off against the Rams. I think the Rams are going to take the 49ers. The Rams have been playing really good football defensively. And 49ers, I thought they had a spark going, but I think the Rams' defense is just going to be too much for them to overcome.
I'm not taking the 49ers anymore. I'm not doing it. Their offensive line is god awful. And I feel bad for Kaepernick. I'm not like a Kaepernick apologist or anything, but like he can't even finish his drop. Like if it's a 3-step drop, by the time he gets to his second and a half step, there's somebody already on him. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
And everybody says, let's put in Blaine Gabbert. That's going to fix everything. I don't think so. Let's put in a new offensive line. That might fix things. But yeah, the Rams, I think that's your lock of the week. And as much as I hate to say it.
Fair enough. The game that I don't know how to call, the Giants face off against the Saints. Now, what's interesting is that this is the kind of game where I feel like the Saints defense could cause some turnovers. And I think turnovers are going to be what decides this game. It is in New Orleans. Eli played good football last week, but they played good football against for all the Giants fans out there who are all over my Facebook, what the hell, man? You're facing a Cowboys team without Tony Romo, first of all. And second of all, they didn't have Dez. But I think the Saints have kind of got their shit together, and I think this is going to be the Saints, but I think that, you know, the game is going to be decided on turnovers.
I'm going to go with the Saints here too, and I'm backpedaling on my Saints suck comment because they've come up with back-to-back good wins over teams that I didn't think they were going to beat. They're the only team to beat the Falcons, and the Colts are just a mess.
Yep.
The New York Giants, I'm not a fan. It's in New Orleans. I think that I don't even think it'll be close.
Wow.
I think turnovers could help, but I don't think it's going to matter.
Vikings get interesting matchup, classic matchup. Vikings travel to Chicago to face off against the Bears. The fantasy readout I had on starting Cutler was Cutler's just as likely to throw four touchdowns as he is to throw four interceptions. And I feel like that summarizes him very well. I think this is a game that the Vikings can take. And so I'm going to go with the away team, the Vikings.
Yeah, I watched a bit of that Vikings game last week. For whatever reason, it happened to be on TV a lot. And I was watching Teddy Bridgewater, and it's funny, man. He looks like just before the snap, if you're looking at him, he looks so scared. He looks like a little kid. But then he drops back and he throws like a 30-yard bullet to that catch that – what the hell is that guy's name? Their wide receiver, the little guy, like the full extension catch. Unbelievable. They're playing good football, man. I got to, unless the weather is crazy, and I don't think it's gotten crazy up there in Chicago just yet. We'll have to ask on, but yeah, I got to go Vikings here, man.
The Chargers face off against the Baltimore Ravens. The Chargers did lose last week, But man, the Ravens have their record is the worst it's been in franchise history. I don't see any sign of recovery. I think the Chargers are going to be pissed off after the loss last week. The Raiders. I'm not sure if I lost Robbie there.
I dipped out, or you dipped out, or what? But we're back. So which game are we on? San Diego and Baltimore?
Yeah, Chargers versus Ravens. It's in Baltimore.
Yeah, I'll take the Chargers, man. Well, we completely agree on every pick.
And what could be the interesting game of the week, and maybe the game to watch, the Cincinnati Bengals. This is the actual Cincinnati Bengals, who are still undefeated. Now, what's weird is I feel like, you know, the two teams this year, at least in the AFC, that could go undefeated are the Patriots and the Bengals. And I know that's crazy talk, but I'm getting the impression the Bengals could go undefeated this year. Now, there's a really good chance. I think there's like a 90% chance that Roethlisberger is going to be back. So that changes things up. But the Steelers are a mess. And the Bengals have not really shown any signs that they are a mess. They've been solid, solid football. It's going to be a great game, but I think the Bengals are going to come out on top.
My boy Andy Dalton, fantasy MVP. There were like four teams in our league who had two quarterbacks before I drafted Dalton as my starter. Now, I'm not saying that I had any anticipation of him being this good, but I waited long enough. What the hell? I waited a little bit longer. And like Teddy Bridgewater was gone before Andy Dalton. That makes no sense to me. I think this is going to be a high scoring game. Yeah, if I were a gambling man, I'd take the over. And earlier when you were talking about turnovers, this could be a game where one turnover decides the whole thing. I think it's going to be a high-scoring game. I think it's going to be really, really close. Normally, in a situation like that, I would take the home team. But I don't think I can. I'm gonna take the Bengals because I'm heavily invested in the Bengals. And I want my boy Dalton to ignore Tyler Eifert and Marvin Jones and just throw it to AJ Green 17 times for 3 touchdowns.
It's week 8. We gotta start taking the smart picks here. In the game of the week that no one cares about, the Tennessee Titans go to Houston to face off against the Texans. Now I know what you're thinking. Texans are a mess. They got completely blown out by the Dolphins. So your gut reaction is, well, the Titans are going to win. But I think this is the true trap game of the week, where your reaction is to take the Titans. And I feel like the Texans have been being embarrassed. They're playing at home. I don't think this is going to be an exciting game, but I'm going to go with the Texans in this one against my better judgment.
I think we're finally going to differ on a pick. And who would have thought that it would be the shittiest game of the week that's going to decide if you win or if I win. I'll take Tennessee. Tennessee, their defense looked strong against Atlanta last week. I'm assuming that they're not going to have Mettenberger, whatever the hell his name is, at quarterback. That Mariota is going to be back. They have no running game to speak of. Neither of these teams really do anymore, with especially with Arian Foster out. He's done. I'll take Tennessee.
In the game that's going to cause me to drink severe amounts of scotch, my Jets, fresh off of a loss, are going to Oakland to face off against the Raiders. Now, the Jets have been winning football games, and they've been playing really, really great defensive football. They've been, you know, kind of getting their offense together, but this is a tough fucking game, and Jets have some key injuries. I'm going to go with the Jets, but this is going to be a very, very tough game. This is going to be a game that's going to go the distance, I think.
Yeah, I think it depends on what kind of game this turns into. If it turns into like a shootout type game, then I think the Raiders will win it. If the Jets can grind it out, I think if it's a really boring football game, the Jets will win, if that makes sense.
Now they're going to get the run game going. If they can get Chris Ivory healthy and running, then they'll just grind up the field. But
I'm inclined to agree with you that the Jets will win this game. Although I think the Raiders are on the verge of becoming a pretty decent football team.
I agree. I don't know what to make of this next game. The Seattle Seahawks are traveling to Cowboys Stadium. I'm a bit of a Cowboys homer, but I feel like the Seahawks could win this game. I feel like they could break out and beat the Cowboys. They still don't have Tony Romo, so Dez Bryant's going to be back, I think. My gut instinct, I'm just going to go with the Seahawks on this one.
You know, the Seahawks, as much as I hate that team. I mean, they lost to the Panthers by 4. They lost to the Bengals by 3. And those are two undefeated teams, by the way.
Yeah, there's 5 undefeated teams in the league, which has never happened in league history by week 8.
They lost to the Packers, and they lost to the Rams inexplicably in week 1 by 3. I think Seattle is trending in the right direction. I'm going to go I'll take Seattle in that game.
Now, the Sunday night game, which I think you couldn't ask for a better matchup, the Aaron Rodgers Packers travel to Mile High Stadium to face Manning Broncos. I mean, this is going to be the absolute game of the week. Regardless of who wins this game, it's going to be a great, great game. Now, I think the Broncos, we talked about this last week, and I think we talked about it a few weeks, that the Broncos have the best record of the worst team in the league. And I think this is the game where the Broncos are going to get exposed. I think the Packers are more of a complete team than the Broncos, and I think the Packers are going to win this game.
The thing with the Broncos is their defense is so damn good.
Mm-hmm.
And it's strength against strength here. It's like a fastball hitter against Aroldis Chapman throwing 103. I mean, you've got a high-powered offense run by the best quarterback in the NFL and one of the best defenses in the NFL facing each other. I think the Packers' defense is fine. It's nothing special. But I don't think that the Broncos' offense is anything special. I got to go Green Bay here. I got to go Green Bay.
All right. Incidentally, the number one defense in the league right now, the Jets. In the money, yeah, it is. they're not only are they the number one defense in the league, but across many metrics, they're the number one. They managed to fix their turnover issue against the Patriots, and I just saw a defensive, and this is all stats based, but the defensive valuation. So that's strength of schedule, et cetera, turnovers, puts the Jets at number 4, just based on defense, which is surprising to me.
Wow.
At any rate, the Monday night game, which I think is not going to even be close, the Colts go to Carolina and face off against the Panthers, and I think the Panthers are going to lay a spanking on them that they are not going to forget. Whoever's facing the Colts next week is going to be in big trouble because the Panthers are just going to embarrass the Colts on Monday Night Football.
We've talked about trap games before, right?
Yep. We have.
Dude, but the freaking Colts are such a disaster. But it's Andrew Luck, right? I mean,
it's Andrew Luck.
I mean, they lost last week, right? But yep. They made it into a game, at least. I don't know, man. That's a tough one to call. Man, and looking and pulling up the Colts, by the way, they get the Panthers this week, the Broncos the next week, and then the Falcons.
Uh-huh.
That's a tough run.
It's a rough schedule. Right,
and you know what the funny thing is? They're 3-4, but they're in first place.
Yeah.
Wow, the AFC South sucks.
Sucks. Carolina Panthers undefeated, but they got a shootout against the Falcons. So,
yeah, I think you're right. I think that's it's an easy call to call Carolina. I want to be weird and go with the Colts, but I'll stick with Carolina. That's the right call. We'll get 10 catches and 2 touchdowns for Greg Olsen and call it good.
There you go. So if you want to get in on the action this week, make sure to email your picks at john@cigarfederation.com, and we'll – we'll tally them up next Wednesday. I think we've only got one game between us, so it'll be an interesting week to see how that matches up. And I really, really hope I win my fantasy matchup because I'm facing someone who's only got one win. So if I lose for my third week in a row, I'm I don't know if I'm going to be able to show my. Yeah, it's going to be tough.
I got to figure. Who am I playing this week? Look, hang on 1 second. I know you're cold. I'm playing Smoke 'em if you got 'em. It's Tom's team. And according to the last time that they said I was going to win by this much, I barely won.
Yeah.
So these projections never really win, but yeah, I feel pretty good about my game this week. We'll see what happens. But yeah, it should be a fun week. It's funny, man. I wasn't looking forward to much NFL this year because I knew the Niners were going to suck, but just having a decent fantasy team makes it a lot of fun.
It does. I've missed participating in pick leagues and fantasy leagues. It makes it more fun for me to pay attention to the different games. And I think it makes you less likely to follow a particular team and more interested in seeing what everyone's doing as a whole.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
All right. So as we always say on Sharing Our Pairings, drink better, drink less, and make sure to check out Cigar Chat tomorrow night with Jose Blanco.